All right. Good morning, and thanks for showing up at 10 a.m. on the second day of the con. This is the marketing for the Independent Creator panel.
Will there be a piano?
So we'll start with introductions. My name is Jason Adams. I work for Lulu.tv, and which is a video and new media site that's a spinoff of self-publishing company Lulu.com.
I work for... Oh, I should probably tell you my name. I'm Nick Popio. I work for Lulu.com, the company that his company spun off from.
In a fireball of awesomeness.
Lesser awesomeness than us, because we're the main group. They have sort of a splinter awesomeness. But, you know, we don't get in fights or anything much.
Good to meet you.
I'm J.C. Hutchins, author of Seven Sun, podcast novel trilogy.
Are you pausing, or was that it?
That's it.
You're not going to go into how it's the most popular...
It's the most popular podcast novel series in history.
In history. My name is Matthew Wayne Selznick. I'm a podcaster and an author, probably most noted for Brave Men Run, which was the first simultaneously released paperback, ebook, and podcast novel. I'm also the host of Writers Talking, a live interactive podcast featuring independent writers like this guy, talking shop and answering your questions. And I taught him everything he knows.
Indeed.
Who's moderating?
That might be me.
Because otherwise I'm lost. Guide us.
All right, so... one of the reasons we put this panel together is because as Nick and I are working for Lulu.com, oh, there's Merle Lafferty.
Everybody.
Hello.
Merle likes to show up late.
That was lackluster, people, but I understand it's 10 a.m.
Darling.
Does this one work?
No. You know, we waited for you.
I know you did.
We stretched out our introductions.
My name is Merle Lafferty. I'm chronically late. I'm very sorry. I also work for Lulu TV.
And she like does some podcasts and some writes some stuff and.
I do some podcasts and I write and stuff.
There we go. Okay, so we're doing this panel because one of the most frequently asked questions in the self-publishing line that we're in is how do we market our work? What's the best way to get your name out there? And that's the biggest challenge for someone, not just someone who's self-publishing their book, but who is an independent creator of any kind, whether you're a podcaster or, you know, a comic book artist or whatever. You know, it's hard to get your name out there without the sort of machine of big publishing kind of behind you. And even then, it's pretty challenging. So this being the first panel I've ever moderated, if you guys just want to jump in at some point, but I guess what I want to start with is talking about things that you have found particularly helpful in your personal marketing experience. Jeez. So
you want to?
Let's start down at the end with Matt.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Well, things that I've found personally advantageous, is that what you're...
Yeah, like, question? You know, what have you found to be particularly successful?
Well, give stuff away. Like, everything.
Can I have your shirt?
Now?
I want your
later.
All right.
I want it now.
Nick wants it now.
Give all of your creative things away. Since I didn't make my house, and I didn't... Well, you might be able to have the shirt.
Okay.
for example... I mentioned that Brave Men Run was released as a free podcast, and in addition to the for pay paperback and the for pay ebook, this was in 2005 when there weren't too many podcast novels out there. Now they're thick as thieves, thick as weeds, whatever. And people had asked, why in the hell would you do that? What are you going to do? Put a couple chapters up as audio? How's that going to work? No, the whole book, word for word. All right, so it's going to be a subscription? No, it's going to be free. And some people said, nobody's going to buy anything that you're going to give away for free. So, yeah, maybe we're preaching to the converted here, but what I've found over time, and the book has been a modest success in all its forms, but what I've found is donations that people willingly gave to the podcast edition of Brave Men Run have far surpassed, in terms of income, royalties from all other forms of the product. And so that was an amazing, you know, sort of pragmatic takeaway. And maybe I won't hog the mic and go on a little bit more, but there are others that maybe we can come back to dealing with audience and things like that. J.C. Hutchins.
Thank you, Matt.
Anytime.
One of the things that Matt was one of the trailblazers of podcast fiction in that he released his novels a free podcast. And back in 2004 and 2005, when I was trying to find an agent for my work, a very long techno-thriller trilogy, I wasn't able to find an agent. And I was very discouraged until I saw the success of Matt and some other folks in the podcasting community. And I thought, well,
like this guy,
if I can't sell it, then let me just give it away. Let me share it. And that's when I released the podcast novel. And one of the things that has really made a difference and an impact on me is the sense of community that grows around either an author or a novel. If you can make some kind of not psychic, but kind of emotional connection with them, or intellectual connection, where they're rooting for you. We're the underdogs. As an independent creator, you're the underdog. Everyone likes to root for the underdog. And if you can kind of leverage that in when you're interacting with the community or your audience, you're really going to – you are not just having – you won't have fans of your work. You will have evangelists for your work. And so the most successful thing that I think I've done in recent months is creating what's called the Seventh Son Ministry of Propaganda, Truth and Advertising. It's an online street team in which, you know, my listeners are encouraged to perform missions for the Ministry of Propaganda, and in exchange they get swag, they get their, you know, public shout outs on my podcast or links to their website on my website, you know, kind of a reciprocal relationship. You know, you're scratching my back, I scratch yours. That was very successful.
What was the question?
You know, tell us about stuff.
Tell you about stuff. When I was actually the one that had my mind changed, because when I first started hearing about podcasting, I thought, well, this is neat thing to talk on and neat thing to do with put essays out and stuff. That's what I did. But there's no way I'd do my fiction, because once you put your fiction out on the internet, then no one will ever, ever, ever buy it, because it's already out there for free. Why would people pay for it? Why would a publisher pay for it? Because if they're thinking their readers can already get it for free. And I was really skeptical, and then I started to see how doing that built your audience. I know for a fact that I have more readers, more listeners than some podcasts. I'll come in again. I know for a fact that I have more listeners than some published authors that I know have readers. And I had my first public reading last night, and I've seen public readings with four or five people, and the place was packed, and that shocked the hell out of me, really. It's because I told people on my podcast, come to my reading if you're at Dragon Con. And it was awesome. And starting to put my, you know, putting your stuff out there when you're, quote, untested, you know, the publishers haven't said, you know, yes, you are good enough to be published and to be read by a large audience. It's tough. It's a test. You know, you've got a lot of people who you're not asking money from them, but you are asking time. And that's a big investment for a lot of people. And people get through your book, then it's pretty amazing. So I am now a completely convert to giving stuff away online, because I have seen, you know, with Scott Sigler and Cory Doctorow, that podcasting your stuff is not the end all to publishing. How was that?
That's great.
All right.
Well done.
Nick Fopio?
I'm not a famous podcaster like these fine people up here with me. But
you are dressed better than any of us.
But I am dressed better than all of you.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot of opportunities out there. You know, podcasting is an excellent example. And I think what's being said regarding community and independent creators is absolutely 100% correct. I mean, there are so many people out there who are also struggling with this and trying to figure out how they can market themselves, how they can get themselves out there, whatever their end goal is. And finding those people through online community sites like LiveJournal, MySpace, Facebook, those places, and developing those connections even while you're working on it and getting help with that process, and then turning that into people who will follow the link and go and check out your book or check out your podcast or whatever it is that you're working on, music or art or anything like that, and having it be a more sort of personal interaction, I think that's really key than going out to some random forum or whatever and posting your link and hoping that people will click on it, or even worse yet, doing nothing and hoping people will somehow find your work, because nobody will. And you really have to go out there and do the work yourself, because you are an independent creator and you don't have a marketing machine behind you. And honestly, even if you were traditionally published, you wouldn't have much of a marketing machine behind you. So you'd still have to do most of the work yourself. And I think those are key ways of doing it.
Yeah, we live in an interesting time where the internet is really making, you know, as sort of we've all sort of said, you know, all of these authors down on this side of the table are the you know, online is the primary way that they're getting their work known. And it's easier than it has ever been to find an audience for something, you know, even if it's a niche book, or, you know, something that would have sort of a small audience or a very targeted audience, because you can find those people online and you can get your word out to anywhere in the world instead of having to, you know, go down the street and hopefully that the local bookstore will take your book or something. But next question I want to talk about is, what have we found you guys have that hasn't really worked at all? Like, is there anything that you tried when it came to marketing that just turned out to be not worth the expense or the effort, or something that just, you know, something as a kind of a cautionary tale, I guess?
Start at the bottom again?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking, and maybe the only thing was that, well, I wouldn't say it was a failure, but don't shotgun your approach to your marketing. When I was getting ready to push this, I put press releases out, paid for some press releases, did a little bit of local media. Some of it stuck, some of it didn't. When I specifically, instead of just, hey, I'm an author, I'm going to let everybody know I've got a book, instead of doing that, because, you know, there's lots of books, lots of people read, but not everybody's going to be interested in what it is that you're doing. So really targeting, I say this a lot, it's not having the largest audience, it's having the right audience, because those people will continue to support you and purchase your things throughout your career. Kind of just spreading your promotion far and wide and hoping that somebody will hit. That's what traditional media and traditional publishing, traditional marketing does. How often do you buy something because you saw a commercial on television, right? So kind of perverting your question, Jason, because I can't really think of an outright failure, or, you know, don't ever do this or that. So, but there is something to at least steer away from and something to do.
Yeah, I'm not sure. See, for me, there have been marketing experiments that I've done that just haven't worked more, and I just kind of chalk it up to my lack of expertise. You know, we hear about Facebook.com, we hear about MySpace, and how these are great networks and sites to build friendships, to expose your property to whomever. Because I am not savvy with MySpace, for instance, I've got a lot of friends, but I don't know how to talk to them on MySpace. I just manage the the friend requests, for instance. It's a great way to get people to check out your stuff. But if you're not actively cultivating a community there, then you're just clicking accept friend, and doing nothing more than that. And that's what I'm doing on MySpace. I don't know yet how to effectively market on MySpace. Another thing that I've had a problem with is getting traction in mainstream media. I mentioned the Ministry of Propaganda earlier, and you know, one of the missions that was sent down from the ministry was to hey, look, everybody, I've written up a press release. You know, go to this particular web page, copy the text that you see on the web page, and email it to your local media. And it was about the Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy, and how writer J.C. Hutchins had, you know, got some celebrities to be on his show, whatever it was. And so I had people copy this web page, the text of this web page, and email it to local media all over the world. I mean, I had people like sending, you know, 50 emails out to 50 different newspapers in their, you know, in their country. And I only got one story out of it, and it was the local story, the local alternate weekly for my hometown. So, and they only ran with it because it was a local guy. So there's, you know, and there's got to be a better way to kind of focus. If you want to shoot outside of your local area, and most of us live in communities where you're not gonna sell a lot of books if you get a story in the newspaper. You have to finesse the way of making the message easier to understand and more noteworthy for media outside of your hometown, and that was something that I was struggling with as well.
One thing I've noticed is a lot of people are trying to do their own merchandising, and I started with Cafe Press because it was easy, and because it had the widest variety of stuff, people could have an I Should Be Writing thong. I thought it was kind of funny because it was an interesting thing to tell your lover as they undressed you. But honestly, I don't think I've sold very much on Cafe Press, and so I moved to Geek Label. I can sell t-shirts on Geek Label for $15. I can sell t-shirts on Cafe Press for $21. I have sold many t-shirts on Geek Label. J.C. Hutchins, how many t-shirts have you sold on Geek Label?
Geeklabel.com is the exclusive...
Ding.
Is the exclusive clothier of the Seventh Son Experience. They've sold more than 300 t-shirts. I don't take a cut. One of the things that I thought, and this was a pretty good idea, was to keep the price as low as I could for the customer. They're doing me the favor of walking around as a walking, talking billboard for my book. So let's keep the price low. The price is less than $15. They buy it. They ship anywhere on the planet. And more than 300 people have purchased shirts in the last 8 months.
Yeah, so I have my patio books, Heaven, Hell, Earth, and The Upcoming Wasteland, also available on Geek Label. And I've sold, I forget the count, it has not 300, but it's much more than anything Cafe Press has ever sold. And I realize Cafe Press's stuff is so expensive that I just wasted a couple of hours building this storefront that no one gives a damn about. So I'd say if you're going to be doing merchandising, research and find out what your fans... you think about what you would pay. I mean, nobody really likes paying that much for a t-shirt. It sucks. And it's early, my God. The second thing was there's a several free voicemail lines out there that you can get. The thing most people use is k7.net. .net, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. And with my latest release of Earth, I thought, why don't we do something different with K7? And I decided to... People are using their voicemail lines to get feedback from the fans. And I decided to use the voicemail line as a way to do sort of a preview for next week for the fans. And so you call my voice line, you just listen. You don't have to leave a message. And at the beginning, lots of people left messages. And then no one did. And then I got kind of busy. And then I released three episodes at once and wasn't quite sure what to do with the voicemail line, so I didn't touch it. And I have received no complaints. No one cares. So this was a $0 30-minute idea I had. So I didn't really lose anything, but it was interesting that no one's caring to call the voicemail line to get the sneak preview for next week. No one's calling the voicemail line to give me feedback either, but my subscriber numbers are up, so I'm not upset about that. But, yeah, I thought it would be an interesting way for me to communicate, but I've got a podcast, so I think that's a good way to communicate with my listeners.
Really?
Really.
Huh, interesting.
Sorry.
What the hell did I do to you this morning?
It's early, and you were late. But,
from downtown.
Yeah. I think that there, everything that's been said is right. I also think a really good way to hurt yourself is to gather the email addresses of people you don't know and then email them and tell them about your awesome new project.
Do not spam people.
I have seen far too many people do that, and it's a really bad idea because, one, it's illegal, and two, you're just going to alienate people. So definitely do not ever do that. If you want to get people's permission from a website form, or if you know people and you talk to them and they say, yes, I would love to know when you're going to be releasing your next CD or book or whatever it is that you're creating, that's awesome. But never, ever spam people. I wish I didn't have to say that, but I've seen too many people do it. Yeah.
Good answers, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I'm asking the table here, is there any topics that we haven't yet touched on that you particularly want to mention?
We've been pretty podcast heavy, and I'm not sure if everyone in the audience is specifically interested in that. Maybe we can find out from you guys and focus our
sounds good
yeah thing.
So so the audience, hello, what would you like to what would you like us to address here on the panel?
What the podcasting people, what services do you use? It's early.
Excellent.
We understand.
Okay, but well, I already said that. For the three podcasting individuals, what hosting services do you use? What software? Do you think it's worth the price if it cost any money? Are there any that you think are better than others?
Well, from as far as services, as in how do we actually distribute the media, Brave Men Run is on podiobooks.com, which is a free service to the user. It's a free service to the author. So they host for free the author's files and all of the, you know, sometimes astoundingly huge bandwidth that book might draw, and of course everything on there is free. It's a donation-based model. Audiobooks.com gives 75% of every donation to the author for that particular book, so they're very friendly. So all three of us really like them. There are so that's for a podcast novel, you know. Or short story collection or whatever. As far as websites, things like that, if you want to go your own route, there are there's some pretty inexpensive services out there. DreamHost has some pretty cheap hosting. GoDaddy is one that's mentioned a lot that I don't personally endorse.
Indy car star Danica Patrick does endorse it.
Sorry, what now?
Indy race car star Danica Patrick does endorse GoDaddy.
And that's good enough for Jason.
Well, every time I go to that site, she's always just kind of staring at me like, "Hi, Jason."
Yeah, she didn't look.
Want to take a ride?
That's when you go.
Yeah,
I don't even like her that much, but I'm sorry,
so,
I didn't
so,
mean
so,
to.
So Libsyn is very inexpensive podcast hosting and web hosting. There's all kinds of free blog hosting opportunities out there, I'm out.
Yeah, you know. No. Yeah, I mean, you can do something as simple as I don't know, like I know that Google and Microsoft have paid like website creation services that are free, and you know, you got ads on your site. But hey, if you're just kind of dipping your toe in the water, it might be a good opportunity. I use DreamHost for my site, the hosting of my site, and I use the service Libsyn to host my MP3s. Yeah, I cannot think of a better group of people for the price, and certainly for the price, than Libsyn. Libsyn recently had a hiccup in its service. It's rare and it happens. I sent an email to this company and I got an email back from the president of the company that like 2 hours after. That's
because you're the J.C. Hutchins.
No, that's because they're committed. They're committed to customer service. It's a great service. I really recommend it. Patiobooks.com. It's a zero risk service in that Libsyn, I'm paying $10 a month to host, these MP3 files, but at patiobooks.com, I don't pay a dime. And money is flowing to me through this donation system that Matt was telling us about. For software, I use a Mac and I use GarageBand, which comes with the Mac. I recommend it if you got one. It's free and it's really good for what I do. And I know that if you're looking for something a little more ambitious, like if you want to do a lot of like sound effects and whatnot in your book, GarageBand might not be the solution for you. But if you're just going to sit down and talk, either updating your audience about what you're doing as an author or an artist from week in to week out, and you're just kind of chatting, GarageBand would do that. Or if you want to do a simple book, kind of like straight narration of a audio book, I'd recommend it too. But is it is it worth the time? And that's really, you can, $10 a month is minimal risk, but all the time that you're going to put into doing a podcast novel, or even just, spending a half hour a week talking into the mic about, updating your audience about whatever you're doing, that's the bigger question. That is kind of personal. It depends on how much time you're willing to invest and how busy you are. But those are the services and software that I use.
I don't have a whole lot to add to these guys. I do want to add, say the free software Audacity. It's available for PC and Mac.
Have you been using it?
Yeah, I still use it. I've been podcasting for nearly 3 years, and I tried GarageBand, and I just keep going back to Audacity, even though it hates me. But that's a very different.
Hate that too.
I'm so sorry.
It's hateful.
I have a question. Do you know any tech people that could help me with like Linux, Ubuntu, and Audacity?
With the Ubuntu forums,
yeah,
the forums for Ubuntu are very active.
I've been on the forums and on the IRC channels, and people look at me, my problems, and go, "What?"
And you've also done the same with Audacity, the community there.
No, I didn't know they had a.
Yeah, there's
Audacity's
there's
open source.
Okay.
Yeah.
But one thing I do want to warn people of, and this is, you probably all know that until recently for podcasters, being popular on the internet can be your death knell because of bandwidth. I had my podcast hosted on my personal site for 7 months. And anybody know Penny Arcade? They
Never
linked
heard of
to
them.
Me.
Right,
yeah,
on.
They linked to me, thank God, at the end of the month, but before the server crashed, it was at 98% of my monthly bandwidth. And I'm sitting there watching the bandwidth going, oh crap. And at that point, I moved to Podlot, which was a very good place to go. I don't think they're taking new clients right now. They didn't want to suffer the growing pains that Libsyn suffered a couple of years ago. And then I joined Farpoint Media, which uses Libsyn for hosting. But I learned my lesson not to, I don't care if you think your podcast is just this little thing, you never know what's going to happen. You never know. And you want a plan with unlimited bandwidth just in case.
And Libsyn is unlimited, right?
Yes.
Because I use Libsyn.
It's limited storage, unlimited bandwidth, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
All right, so we got
questions in the back.
Oh wait, can I answer one quick? When Jason asked a question about general advice, and answer all your email. This applies to webcomics, anybody. Answer all your email. It's so strange. You just think you're this little schlub sitting behind the computer, and then someone's like, "Holy shit, I didn't know you'd write back. Oh my god!" And it's really weird, but it's just, I mean, even just thanks for writing, thanks for listening, answer all your emails. Seriously, it's huge for touching base with your audience.
And the same is true of if you have like a blog or anything like that.
Exactly.
If somebody comments, comment back. Let them know that you are paying attention and that what they said meant something.
And that you appreciate them.
Yes.
And hug them.
Yes. Hug
hippie.
Them. Hug them.
Damn,
electronically.
Hippie.
That's important.
Can you guys talk about the effectiveness of podcasting now that so many podcasts are out there that, you know, basically iTunes is swamped and you can barely find anything?
Hey, sure.
Go, Matt, go.
The effectiveness of podcasting in terms of marketing.
Yeah.
I can think of no other way that for free I can speak directly to my audience all over the world. iTunes is one way people get podcasts. It's about 50% of podcast subscribers use iTunes, but iTunes sucks as a directory. There are a lot of other sources out there, which I'm going to ask these guys to name some. Podcast Pickle, Podcast Alley, a couple of them. You get to a point where, and this is where I'm at, where I get all my podcasts from friend and listener and, you know, people just hyping it to me, their recommendations, mostly word of mouth as far as what I listen to. As a creator, I make sure that I'm on all these directories, you know, and that everything is all my ID3 tags are done correctly in the MP3s and that everything is tagged and all that social bookmarking stuff is done as much as I can, which we can talk about a little bit if somebody wants to. You want to craft your stuff so that it's iTunes friendly, but don't assume that everybody is going to be using iTunes. Kind of the underlying point to that and any kind of promotion that you're doing, any kind of multimedia that you're going to be offering, make sure that you give your audience as many choices in how they're going to consume that, you know, whether it's different media or different avenues to get to that media.
For me, it kind of remains to be seen. The bad news was that I couldn't find an agent in 2005 for my monstrously large trilogy. The good news is that I have an agent now based on the success of the podcast novel. So we know that there's traction there and that some people out there get it. We don't know if a book that originated in podcast form will be a hit in mainstream publishing or in independent publishing. We're seeing modest hits. A colleague of ours is signing a deal with a major publisher, and he's going to be the guinea pig, and we're going to see if he
it's this guy again.
This guy, Scott Sigler. He's here too. Yeah, you can keep an eye out for him.
That's why we're all so tired, is because of Scott Sigler.
but ultimately, it's like we're going to know in about a year or two whether or not podcasting really has a way, you know, if it's going to be taken seriously as a way to kind of cater to an established and an already existing fan base. I mean, like that's the great news about Seventh Son, is that whoever publishes Seventh Son is getting 30,000 listeners who want this book, and a brand recognition of at least 300,000 just with all the promotion I've done. Just simply because you heard my promotion or you were exposed to Seventh Son doesn't mean you're listening to it. So I know that the message is going really far out there, but my listenership is just a fraction of that. So, but I've got out of the gate, I've got awareness for and darn near commitments from 30,000 people, and no first time novelist can ever say that.
No, and second or third.
A lot of them. Who knows if all 30,000 would go out and buy a copy? We know that's not going to happen. But the fact is that it's found money, and once publishing gets that, and it may take a year or two or five or ten. It's going to be a good time for people like us who are going to be using new technologies or creative ways of marketing to build an audience. We're gonna win.
Mark, on that, did you want to add to that?
I have I guess I have something small and negative to say is that with the whole iTunes, the three of us got in relatively early. There were fewer than 1,000 podcasters when I started, and my audience is not. It's, you know, compared to Hutch, it's tiny. Compared to most podcasters, it's pretty big. But it's established. If I were starting a book right now, I don't know that I could give advice on how to build the audience that I have now because it was different when I started. So I just want to give that caveat. Sorry to be a little negative here, but it is kind of a mess out there, and it's a little more difficult now to make yourself heard above the noise. So the cross-marketing and all of that is really good.
As an independent publisher, I have a question. One of the walls I've run up against is with big publishing. Mm-hmm. That whole, oh, you're an independent publisher, that means you're not good enough. it's real, and as independent creators, we know it is. But there's that stigma. How do you fight that stigma? Because, I mean, okay, if I'm an independent publisher and I'm selling my work and I'm making some money and breaking even or whatever, that's one thing, but giving it away, that seems to me that would even create a greater stigma. Specifically, Hutch, you're breaking through that mold, and kudos to you, and that's going to be good for all of us. How?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of the things that I realized quite recently, and it was so funny. It was like, holy shit! I'm a vanity press. I have published the audio version of my novels online, and I'm a fool because I'm giving away for free. What's that all about? And one of the things that we're dealing with, and Matt as a Matt's published. I'm not published, so I can't speak about it too much. But I have worries that maybe the sellability of this book has been compromised by the fact that 30,000 people have listened to it, and that maybe because it's already been published and we know how it ends, we know who shot JR. You know what I mean? Then no one's going to buy it. Again, canary in the coal mine. I don't know. I'm doing my best to find out. The agent's doing everything she can, but she hasn't made a deal, so we honestly don't know. But it's a long tail experiment. We're gonna see. I mean,
and just to give you a little horror story, I sat on a panel with an editor for a pretty big name publisher at a recent convention, and there were five independent authors and him, and he's an editor for a big house. And we told everybody what independent publishing and POD was all about, and whether it works or doesn't work, how much it costs, how you have to market your own work. And then it was his turn, and he said to the audience, basically, I think you're all wasting your time, and I think that's worse than nothing. If you're doing it yourself, you're not good enough to get published traditionally. Uh-oh. Oh, it was a fight. I mean, I got so hot, I was ready to go over the table at him, but...
Matt's going to hunt him down.
I have some experience.
I heard that the podcast you were on recently,
the writing show.
With people, yeah.
I the whole point behind Brave Men Run, I've been a DIY advocate for 20 years in doing various things, music, print, before the internet was a gleam in anybody's eye, except maybe Al Gore's. and so when it came time to do my first novel, doing traditional publishing was not an option. I would be a hypocrite if I, did everything else DIY and then said, well, I'm going to shop this around to whoever. So I made sure that this was that the book and I became an object lesson, and that the book became as much as about teaching people, other creators, that this can be done, and you do not need the New York publisher to be a viable success. Now, if you're using your podcast or you're doing something in a short run or using Lulu or whatever to sort of feed the pool and get the name out there so that you do get published on, you know, you get that agent or you get the New York House to love you, that's fine. It's one option, but it's not the only option anymore. And the publishers are very, very down on POD because it changes the model. It changes the whole conversation. And they don't quite understand, for the most part. There are some very good exceptions. Peer Books, PYR Books. Editorial director with that house is pretty savvy. David Muldaur with St. Martin's Press is pretty savvy. But these are little voices in a pretty big wilderness. By and large, they want the standard means of distribution to continue because that's their jobs.
Exactly.
And, you know, last year at WorldCon, I heard the same thing from people. The question was, are ebooks viable? And one guy said it will be 50 years before ebooks are a viable option. And I'm like, this was a, you know, these are it's a science fiction convention and you people are in 1942, you know? So don't be frustrated by the attitude of mainstream media because they are not the only choice anymore. They're never going to go away, and nor should they. I'm not saying, you know, destroy.
Down with the man.
Not at all. The man's always going to have a place. But the thing is, it's not the man anymore. It's the people. The people's media is really what we're talking about here. Because anybody can create and anybody can distribute worldwide their stuff, there is going to be a lot of crap. Sturgeon's Law is like writ large now, you know. So people who put out stuff that is popular, it's our responsibility to evangelize, to show everybody else that it can be done. And I hope that answers your question.
We can
talk more later if you like.
I wanted to add something that it's not all mainstream publishers have that opinion of the self-published author.
Right.
I was on a panel at the Jack London Writers Conference in San Francisco earlier this year. It was called The Great Debate, Traditional versus Self-Publishing, and it was me and a representative from Author House and someone from Wiley and someone from Jossie Bass, and the guy from they were both the people that acquire new titles for their publishing house, and they had nothing but good things to say about self-publishing. And in fact, the guy from Wiley was like, just this week I lost a bid on a book that had the self-help book that had been self-published. They were trying to acquire it for Wiley, and another publisher outbid them to get this book in the thing. And then there was an agent in the audience who stood up and said, "Yeah, we've had success with, getting deals for people who are self-published." So there's still obviously a lot of that stigma left, and attitudes are changing, and part of it is because of the way that the internet is creating these big audiences, and publishers are finally starting to get the hint that, like, just because people have read it already online doesn't mean that they're not going to want to buy a book. And the fact that if it's self-published, then it must be bad. There are so many more books out there than there are spots in publishing. These guys from these publishing houses were saying in a year maybe they pick up like 20 books, and there's so much out there, and so yeah, sure, some of it's crap, a lot of it's not, and that's so you've had your hand up for a while, sir.
Yeah. Two things. In terms of marketing and marketing strategies, I would suggest a book by a man named Fred Alvine, and it's The Best Ways to Market Whatever. Literally, that's the title. And he's a marketing professor, and he's been teaching marketing for over 30 years. All of you have got your own marketing ideas and whatnot, so, it's just one of those things where that's another resource you might want to look into. how to market whatever.
The guerrilla marketing series of books are also very good.
Yeah. Then the next point is in terms of how people's opinions are changing. I work in the legal industry, and for them, everything has been pen and paper since the country was founded. So suddenly, lawyers are coming in and saying, oh, we have a hard drive with emails dating back to 2000 and whatever, saying, you know, no, we came up with this idea first. And it was literally, the hard drive was thrown out of court as evidence because it was not in a pen and paper format. So that was 3 years ago. This year alone, people have suddenly started to see it doesn't matter what media it comes in, it's content and who made it that matters. So if the legal industry can change within a shorter period of time as 3 years, I wouldn't be too worried about, you know, writing books. But the major proponents for it are individuals who evangelize and proselytize this idea that media no longer matters, it's content and people that matter. So you guys have got a bright future ahead of you. Just letting you know.
We know.
I think they might be aware at this point.
You got good things coming for you.
Here you go. Okay, let me get back here.
Hi, thanks. Something that I heard earlier that I thought was really good advice was find your audience and target them. How do we do that?
Well, you do that by, for example, Brave Men Run is a book that takes place in the middle of the 80s, and some of the people have superpowers. And there's other elements that I won't give away, but the point is, it's a science fiction book. I'm not going to look just at science fiction outlets. I'm going to look at people who like comic books, people who, you know, are interested, you know, throwback to the 80s, people who are in their 30s and 40s, you know, and look for venues that, you know, service those folks. Also, again, because the book is also a message, you know, the way the book is being done, I talk to a lot of people who are interested in independent publishing and, you know, new media and, you know, the merit economy and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be different for each one of these folks and for all of you. But kind of figure out that, you know, here's your target. Look a little bit around the target, as long as it's related. But don't aim for the wall that the bullseye is on. You know, aim for the middle. And it's going to be different for each case, but kind of look for those angles. You know, somebody's going to be interested in the peripheral stuff, but not, I wrote a book, so everybody who reads should read my book, you know.
And one way to accomplish figuring out what your target audience might be is to think about how you would try and find your content online. How would you go to Google and find your content if you wanted to be ranked number one in Google, and they weren't searching on the term Brave Men Run or whatever?
Why in the hell not?
I mean, that's a good title, so maybe they are. But I, presuming that they aren't, you know, no, searching on 80s superhero science fiction is going to probably turn up your content. So figuring that out is definitely key, and then optimizing for that is also key. And you can do that by putting in keywords, though don't spam the keywords with stuff that's irrelevant because you won't be helping yourself.
You may even be hurting yourself. The search engines are savvy to that, and they'll cut you down.
Find linking sites. If you have a blog, or I'm not sure what the situation is for podcasts, but there are a lot of sites out there for blogs that will basically create little communities of other blogs and then update their site whenever you update, and that will help with search engine optimization as well. So find things like that for whatever it is that you're doing, and use them to the best of your ability and just try and get up further and further in those search results so that when Joe Schmo is searching for, I don't know,
stuff that Schmoes are like.
Yeah, Joe Schmoes find interesting or whatever. Your stuff comes up within the first few pages of results.
Okay. The microphone's back there. I'm sorry.
Let me go ahead and give a caveat first. I'm coming from the webcomic world, so we do have a different aspect on some of the things. Let me first ask the question I wanted to ask, and that was, you talked about Geek Label. We had done Cafe Press as well, and we were able to get our costs down, but getting a profit of about 21 cents per shirt. We eventually went to a local t-shirt silk screener, and were able to get a very decent price on that, but there's always the price ahead of time. What are the prices and the profit margin you're looking at with Geek Label? And before you answer that, the statement I wanted to make is, one thing I haven't heard is people talking about reviews of the books. We actually get a heck of a spike in our readership whenever we get one of these nasty, venomous reviews coming down.
Sure.
And afterwards, yeah, we do see it level off, but it's still a lot greater than we were having before. So, I mean, don't be afraid of having some of these people sit out there and rip your book, your comic, or whatever, because people are going to see why they hate it so much.
This milk is spoiled. Here, taste it.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll find out that it isn't spoiled, that it's actually ice cream in disguise. But
I'm a writer.
Okay, with Geek Label, from the get-go, for me, the deal was is that Geek Label offered me a commission of every sale. What we would have to do is, you know, bump up the price of the shirt a couple of bucks, and I'd get those, let's say, $2, whatever. I opted not to do that. Kind of karmically, I wanted to just kind of, you know, keep it low key. It's less for me to worry about at this point. I'm not interested in monetizing yet. But, you know, you could, for instance, with the Geek Label, you know, they say, okay, it'll cost us $15 to make it. Okay, anything more than that is money in the kit, you know.
The way we ended up doing it, the reason we could afford to do it, we took a lot of pre-orders.
Yeah, beforehand. Yeah, that's good.
We ran it's with a two-color silk screen, we ended up getting $7 per shirt.
Yeah.
And selling it at $12.50, which is a little bit less than the 15 most people use.
Yeah.
And with pre-orders, we were able to get a much greater order and made our profit in the long run at conventions and such.
Yeah, and for me, it was like, I didn't have I didn't have the money to do that. I didn't have the money to go and order, you know, 1,000 shirts or whatever it may be in advance. So I just simply, you know, the cool thing about Geek Label is they're like a custom t-shirt company where you get to pick the color of the shirt and then the color of the ink of the design or whatever. So they're making these by hand every day. There's no machine pressing out these shirts. And so because I knew that I wouldn't have to buy 1,000 in advance because they're making them on the fly day in and day out. So.
It's like POD for t-shirts.
Exactly.
Are the ink really sold?
You'll have to touch my chest after the show. I'm not savvy in this this newfangled t-shirt technology.
I think it's silk, but don't quote me on it.
A question I had for you guys is, I've seen a number of online websites that are self-publishing sites where they're successful enough that the people are making a living off the site alone. And in all of them, I've seen a very similar business model. You know, they started out doing it as a hobby. You know, it's something they were doing for fun because they liked it. You know, and over like a year or two, they built an audience. And then one day they got linked by someone big like Wired or Penny Arcade or whoever, and that's when it just exploded, and the next thing you know, they're making a living off of it. Is there any way, I guess, to make that happen, or do you just have to
No.
get lucky?
Sorry, yeah, it's luck having quality product and getting your name out there, but there's no way to make that happen. Sites like that are going to pick you up because they like your content.
Right,
and
because they think you're cool.
Exactly, and so unfortunately, there's no magic way to go, oh, I just got boing-boinged again. it would be nice if there was. But following the advice that the panel has, I think, is the best way of getting the opportunity to do that. definitely, you know, using a self-publishing site, I'm biased because I represent Lulu and we do print-on-demand stuff, but having those resources where you can have people view your content, they can review it, things like that, and again, that kind of stuff helps with search engine optimization so that when somebody is looking for your content, your Lulu.com storefront or whatever self-publishing venue you decide to go with will come up along with the other search results. People will find your content, and hopefully they'll buy your content, and then you'll make however much money it is that you make off of it, and that's really kind of the end goal.
Did that one thing really tell you that much? A little
comment on your question there. The only thing I can say is, as someone who did get boing-boinged and wasn't really ready for it, be ready for it, because you don't know when it'll happen.
Yeah, like Murr was saying, make sure that you have things set up so that if you do hit it huge, you're not going to have to pay the cost for it.
Okay, on the subject of search engines, how do you get your website to come up on the search engines on the better pages? Is it just hits or what?
Like I was saying with search engine optimization, you have to optimize your site for that. It won't just magically appear on the first page of the results unless you have a very strange website name and they happen to type in that exact word.
Yeah, in terms of how actually to do it, yeah. Some of the things you can try, first of all, get the URL that is your name, not your product, but your name, because you're going to make lots of products. And your name is probably unique, you know, or more unique than other things might be. If you've got a blog, make sure that what you want to appear in a search engine is in the subject of your blog. You know, so if it's my great new book, make sure the title of the post is my great new book called, you know. A lot of the search engines don't give as much attention to the meta tags in your HTML anymore. So your description tags, your keywords in the meta tag, they don't look at that a whole lot or as much, give it as much credence. So put those in, but don't depend on them, and definitely don't, you know, just do my wonderful book 15 times over and over and over again, you know, in your meta tags, because they will see that and say, we're going to rank you at all. Another thing you can do is get links to your site by being reciprocal, by participating in forums. If you're not putting your signature in your forum posts on all the forums that you visit and hang out at with your website and the name of your book, webcomic, movie, whatever, in your signature, you're missing an opportunity to get links back to your site. Make sure it's a URL, right? Same thing with your signature and email, of course. This sounds like no-brainer stuff, but this all helps. But be reciprocal and make sure people have the opportunity to dig delicious, stumble upon, blob, you know, Magnolia, whatever, all these, you know, make sure they have the opportunity to tag your stuff on these social networking sites. Depending on the platform that you use for your website or your blog or whatever, there are some free plugins out there you can get that are like a one-click thing that hit them all. So, some ideas.
Okay, now, of course, internet is worldwide, right? But not being mostly here from the United States, my experience, I come from the webcomic world, but not being here in the United States, a lot of limitations I run into have been precisely because I'm not here. Mm-hmm. You know, I come from South America, and you know, a lot of the problems I get is, you know, payment, shipping, a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, I'm sure most of you guys don't run into. You know, if I produce merchandise, I'm probably never going to see it. You know, because having it shipped over to me,
yeah,
it's going to cost me an eye and who knows what else. And when it comes to payment, for example, I use DreamHost, but I had to use DreamHost because it was really the only one I could use that I could pay for. Because
you could send them a check, right?
Yeah. No, actually, DreamHost takes PayPal.
That's right. PayPal, they started taking PayPal.
So
yeah.
That was really the only reason I used DreamHost. I was lucky enough. Now, of course, I know you guys are over here, so you probably can't say how, you know, you can't give me advice being, you know, international. But I was wondering what you guys do you know, maybe for your international audience? Because, of course, I'm sure that not all your listeners, readers, and everything are from the United States, but I was wondering if you did anything special, if anything, for, you know, your readers that are maybe in other places, maybe mm-hmm. people that speak other languages and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
There are numerous fans. Well, first off, I made sure that the company that was making these shirts, for instance, would ship worldwide. That was just a no-brainer. But I have fans who live in other countries who want to translate my book, and I have strongly considered this kind of fan translation and deployment, I guess, or you know, sending out a recording and a release of it in other languages, Spanish, German, and others. And that's Czech. It was crazy, the Czech Republic. Anyway,
awesome.
It was those are things that may happen down the road, but being, and I'm finding that there's kind of like an people who do not speak English as a first language are listening to my book, and I'm sure other people's books here, to grok the language, to learn more about it, to learn how to speak it, and that's really cool. But that was never an intent of mine. So while I don't do anything specific other than make sure that my shirts ship globally, it's been on my mind. This thing that you're talking about, making sure that the international audience is catered to, it's something that I've been thinking about quite a bit recently.
And I think that with this sort of growth that we're seeing with podcasting, with other online forms of media, webcomics are a great example. That's growing. I know a lot of companies are looking into being able to do more worldwide stuff. I know Lulu, for example, can ship internationally. We accept PayPal, so you can you could pay for stuff through us that way. Just, you know, little plug there. But I think that's an overall thing. I think that more companies are having to do that because they realize that there are people out there who are listening, watching all that stuff in other countries, and will pay them money if we just let them.
Yeah, at Lulu, that's definitely something we've been trying to make easier for people who are, you know, who are ordering from, you know, wherever. So we have printing facilities in Europe, so that someone from Europe is not having to pay to get the ship from, you know, the great thing about POD is, you know, the author doesn't have to deal with the fulfillment end of things. You know, the customer orders it through the site, and then it gets printed and shipped directly to them. And so the author of the book doesn't have to like order the books and then pack them back up and deal with that themselves. So that's definitely one expense that, from the author's point of view, they do not have to, you know, they don't have to deal with. Of course, for the customer, you still have to, you know, it's frustrating because people in Canada have to pay these really high shipping prices because it's international, for example, and, you know, and it's not even an overseas issue. So, I mean, it's one of those things that is gradually getting improved, and once there's, you know, enough people realize that this is a big issue, then I think, you know, we'll see a lot of improvement. But
I'm sorry, Jason.
No, that's
I'll throw this out there. You said you were doing webcomics as well? Okay, so maybe this is a thought, and you could even do this with T-shirts and things like that. Give your customers, your audience, the opportunity to download it as a PDF, maybe much less expensive than, you know, if they had a tangible product, so that they can print it themselves. Give them something they can print out on a transfer, so they can make their own T-shirts that they're paying for a little bit, but not what they would pay, you know, to have something shipped to them. I just thought of this just now, so I don't know, maybe it's something I'm going to do. Because it's intangible media that a lot of this stuff can be transformed at the end by the end user into something tangible if they want it to be. So you offer it for less and let them take it that next step if they want. I don't know, maybe. Might just work. It's crazy.
You're crazy, but you might be good kind of crazy.
Might be good crazy. Not bad crazy.
Yeah, not bad crazy. Maybe. We haven't decided yet.
I recently had a German, somebody who wanted to do a German podcast, science fiction That was in the wrong order, but you know what I'm talking about. German language science fiction podcast, and they asked for the translation rights to a story that I had sold to Escape Pod, which is the U.S., well, English-speaking science fiction podcast. And they were, you know, they said we couldn't pay, but, you know, we really want to do it. And I thought, I'm at the point now where I don't want to just give stories away, but, I mean, if to another person. I mean, yes, I give all sorts of shit away of podcasts, but, you know, if somebody else wants to publish my stuff, I want at least a token. But with this, I thought, who's going to ask for translation rights, really? So I thought, what the hell? And it came out, and I said, oh, by the way, I know I have some German listeners, so there's a new sci-fi podcast out there, and they have one of my stories. And the response with my listeners and with my friends was, oh, my God, that's amazing. Do you realize you just opened up your fiction to a, you know, mostly bilingual country? They're going to hear this, and they're going to think, oh, wow, who's this Merle Lafferty? And then they're going to find your other stuff. And I thought, oh, yeah.
Internationally translated author, Merle Lafferty.
So I didn't even consider that. I was just thought I was doing the guy a favor. But that's my little touch with international stuff that maybe – again, giving away translation rights may be an interesting marketing opportunity. You never know. I mean, for a trilogy, that's a little different. This was a short story, low risk. But I was interested. I'm interested to see where it's going to go because it just got published a couple of weeks ago.
Did you have a question in the front?
Oh, actually.
Earlier? Okay. They got it.
Got it.
You sure, Leanne? Sure. Okay.
Nah.
Ask me later.
Fair enough.
Any more questions?
We have answered all of the questions.
Go forth and market.
Yes.
Independently.
Your brains are full of our knowledge.
What are we going to do now? I wanted to ask about email since you said that email blasting is a bad idea. Is there anything else that you could recommend that is...
Well, opt
more
in.
More well received.
Yeah.
Opt in.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The point is the CAN-SPAM Act makes it a federal crime to spam, and people have been going to jail for it recently. and it's just bad will. You always want to give people an opt in. You know, collect email addresses, let them know what you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
And at the bottom of every email, if you are sending out something that's not, oh, hey, Joe, you know, and it's chatty, you know, if you are marketing something through email, the bottom of your email has to, not should, has to, by law, give the person who's receiving that a way to stop getting those emails. So definitely, definitely cultivate the relationship through email with your audience. Absolutely. Respond to those emails as quickly and as personably as possible all the time. But when it comes to doing a blast of email from all those people who are interested in you, make sure that you do it right. And you know, there's a lot of resources out there online, you know, that you can look at that will teach you in a much more accurate way than maybe any of us can. But always give the opt-out option.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anything else?
Oh, there's one.
Oh, look, another question.
Why the hell not?
Yep, since nobody else is.
I like talking.
And that is one thing that was brought up briefly was cross-creator promotions, you know, getting somebody else to do it. What do you think is the best way to start cultivating a relationship with some of the other authors and doing simultaneous promotions with each other?
Go to Dragon Con?
Go to where?
Dragon Con.
Oh, okay.
Be here.
Talk to people.
Yeah, conventions like this are a great yeah. place to meet like-minded creators and people and really get a chance to you know, talk shop. Because with podcasting, a lot of podcasters will exchange promos and play each other's promos on their and we're not all jerks, Nick.
That's right, it's just you.
But yeah, that's definitely something that has been in the podcasting community has really helped. Get other people in the community aware of what's who's out there and what's going on, and being able to forge relationships, and you play each other's promos, and you know, give each other shout outs and pat each other on the back and stuff like that, you know.
One of the more successful marketing things that I've done in my podcast is, you know, my buddy Scott Ziegler and I, we were talking about how we knew that our sci-fi novels had similar audiences, but we knew that audiences were not identical. And we knew that some folks were going to him for the horror and, you know, the horror sci-fi, and some folks in my camp, there was overlap, but we wanted to make the overlap larger. And we did a crossover in the books that were being released at that time, where I rewrote the manuscript of my book, and he rewrote the manuscript of his, so that in specific points in the story, the events of my novel are being mentioned in his novel, and vice versa. This you couldn't do. It's like you know, DC Marvel crossover. That's exactly what it was. And it blew me away. Not only because we both got so many. I mean, I still get emails about this. About, oh yeah, I heard about you from the crossover 2 years ago. That's awesome. But it expanded the listenership. But it expanded my mind to the to the possibility that you could never have done that with paper and ink in between you know, covers. This was a purely new media phenomenon that had never happened before, and because it's so fast and so free, and all it required was 10 minutes of me going into my manuscript, and you know, I just changed the name to, you know, to reference, you know, the character in his novel, and I got thousands of people talking about it, and that's pretty cool. There's something to be said for that.
Wasn't there another sort of crossover with your property, J.C. Hutchins?
Well, yeah, Merle Lafferty, tell us all about it.
No. I mean, if you don't remember, then it's obviously not important.
Now,
so.
Here's, you know, and
oh snap!
And here's something else that's worth mentioning is that in more significant than the initial crossover. No, Mur was kind enough, and I was flattered and humbled when Mur put the seven protagonists, the seven human clone protagonists of my podcast novel trilogy, in her novel, again in another crossover moment, in which the story takes place in Mur's book, where the world has ended, and the story goes on in the afterlife. This is a book about the afterlife. So that means that my guys are dead.
You know, uh-huh.
Which means
spoiler alert.
Which means they can show up in heaven. And that's
blow the sequel
down. Well, you'll learn all about it. Listen to it. You'll be good. And again, that's just something. It's another example of just how fleet-footed and awesome this new media, where it's, you know, where you're not committed to permanence in a way, can really expand storytelling. And the experience of enjoying it.
And even though Hutch didn't obviously the world did not end in his book.
Spoiler alert.
Usually you say those before the spoiler.
I'm tired.
So it wasn't like a real crossover, but I know that Hutch mentioned it on his podcast, and I got listeners from him. And believe it or not, I had listeners that he didn't have, which shocked the hell out of me. And after listening to that episode, they went to go check out Seventh Son to see, oh, wow, these guys have another story. That's really cool. And that was it worked out a lot better than I ever could have hoped. I just thought it would be a fun little sort of in-joke. But no, it was really powerful thing.
And I know that you webcomics guys in the audience are full aware of this, but I know a lot of comics artists will guest on other webcomic strips, and that's a good way for some cross promotion there, where you know this week guest artists and they are doing your comic, and that's a pretty cool thing, and a good way to not only find, you know, get people new eyes on your work, but also just to, you know, foster goodwill in your, you know, the community that you're a part of.
And on that, you know, reach out to the people who are making themselves a success in your area. Send an email to Scott Kurtz, or walk up to him at a convention and talk to him. People who have actually managed to quit their day jobs or what have you, if you haven't. and talk to them about getting a potential link. I mean, we were talking earlier about Wired and things like that, and how do you get that done? And I said, no, you can't magically make it happen. You can if you know the person and they know you and they like what you do. And so that's really important in terms of creating that personal connection there. It doesn't always work. And don't get really upset when they tell you, no, I'm not going to link to you, but try. Yes.
Hey, there's no harm in sending an email to the guys at Boing Boing and be like, hey, there's this really cool, you know, webcomic you should check out, and it might work.
But or as Jason found out, mentioning Cory Doctorow or recording a talk that he did and getting yourself linked that way.
Yeah. Somebody way in the back had something?
Hey, they mentioned Homeboy and they didn't bitch about me. We're growing.
Yeah, okay.
You just email them. They have a policy not to respond or put stuff on the site that people have emailed them.
Right.
Use the form.
And that, excuse me, that goes with anything like that. You know, if you're going to communicate with somebody, do it respectfully. You know, if you're going to try to do the boing boing thing, use the form. If you're in any of these, you know, look at the instructions, read the manual.
Do it right or you'll get blasted.
Yeah, and you know how it is. They will blast you publicly, and their audience is bigger than yours.
Or worse, ignored.
Yes. All right.
Have you guys ever thought of getting help from, like, the Small Business Administration or anything like that?
No.
A lot of what you're saying is what entrepreneurs as a whole experience every single time they try to start up a new business.
So check it out.
Okay, any last questions? We need to wrap up pretty quick. Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for coming out.